Welcome to the Hannah Miller Show. And here she is, Hannah Miller.
Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian. This is Hannah Miller, and this is what happened this week. So we're going to cover two things this week. I want to talk about the upcoming election here in South Carolina, of course, everywhere. But here in South Carolina, we're going to have two constitutional questions on the ballot, and I want to talk about those, and that's what we'll start off with today. And then I want to talk about this article from The Atlantic calling for amnesty, for forgiveness regarding COVID-19. We're going to go over that. If you haven't heard anything about it, I'll bring you up to speed, and we're going to respond to that a little bit here in the second half of the show. So let's get started. Let's jump right in. What are the statewide constitutional amendments? There's been a lot of questions about this and what they mean and what are they trying to do here. And of course, it involves money, so none of us trust the government when it comes to questions about money. So I'm going to read the amendments and then I'll offer a little bit of clarity on them because the way that they're written is always a little bit hard to kind of pick apart sometimes. So statewide constitutional amendments must, Section 36A, Article 3 of the Constitution of the state relating to the General Reserve Fund, be amended so as to provide that the General Reserve Fund of 5% of general fund revenue of the latest completed fiscal year must be increased each year by 0.5% of the general fund revenue of the latest completed fiscal year until it equals 7% of such revenues. So many words. So a yes vote will increase the amount of money state government must keep in the General Reserve Fund. And that's basically their rainy day fund. And it was 5%, or it is 5% of the previous year's revenue. And they want to move that up to 7% of the previous year's revenue. That's the first one. All right. The second one, must Section 36B, Article 3 of the Constitution of this state, be amended so as to provide that the Capital Reserve Fund of 2% of the general fund revenue of the latest completed fiscal year be increased to 3% of the general fund revenue of the latest completed fiscal year, and to provide that the first use of the Capital Reserve Fund must be to offset mid-year budget reductions. All right, a yes vote here will increase the amount of money state government must appropriate to the Capital Reserve Fund from 2% of the previous year's revenue to 3% of the previous year's revenue, and require that the Capital Reserve Fund's first priority is to offset mid-year budget cuts at state agencies. So yeah, I understand the concern with all of this. It's kind of confusing. And then I reached out to Josiah Magnuson, who is my representative, to make sure that I was completely grasping this. And of course, he understood my concern, that, wait a minute, are they going to raise taxes in order to meet this requirement to save money and pay for everything? However, this was the clarification, and of course, it's already in there. There is already a requirement to save. This just moves it from 5% to 7%, and a requirement to save money is a poor argument for a tax increase that has to be debated on its merits. And from what Josiah was saying, from what he's seen, there's enough state government spending to cut that we shouldn't be cornered into a tax increase for a long time. And he said that he's supporting the amendments. And from that discussion with him and others that I've had, I'll be supporting those amendments. I think he's right. We have the money, and I'm all for putting more money into saving and saying, hey, whatever our budget is, we need to be saving more of that budget. And we're not going to increase. They'll have a hard time proving that they need to increase taxes in order to save more, especially when there are other things in the budget that they can cut. So that's that. I'm going to be voting yes on both of those amendments. If you'd like to reach out for more clarification, if I could help any more, I would be glad to do that. I know I had quite a few people who, sent me questions and were like, wait a minute, what in the world are they doing here and what are they talking about? So I hope that helped. I am in agreement with Josiah, who's a very conservative, very small government guy and wants to keep as much money in, you know, South Carolina citizens' pockets as possible. So he's definitely one of the good guys and on our side. So I have a lot of trust in Josiah when he's talking about these things because he does know what he's talking about. All right. So moving on to the other story that I mentioned at the beginning. So Brown professor Emily Oster wrote an article for The Atlantic this week that has received both a lot of ire and a lot of support. And this is something that she said. I'm not going to quote the whole thing for you, but let me sum it up. She said, quote, "We need to forgive one another for what we did and said when we were in the dark about COVID." And she went on to say, "Let's acknowledge that we made complicated choices in the face of deep uncertainty and then try to work together to build back and move forward." Except, as Tyler Durden wrote over at Zero Hedge, they weren't in the dark about COVID. There were numerous sources pointing out the actual science that ran contrary to the mandate claims. And they were deliberately silenced by a vast media campaign. And evidence suggests that media platforms worked in tandem with big tech, the CDC, and the Biden administration. And this is a direct quote from Tyler Durden. "It was not a simple matter of overreaction. There was collusion to remove all counter information." Oster's plea for, quote, amnesty follows the disintegration of the COVID narrative. That's what's going on here. The COVID narrative has recently seen multiple huge losses in the public eye. The vaccine narrative is crumbling altogether. A New York City judge reinstated employees fired over their unvaccinated status. That's just two stories that we covered last week. So if you'd like to have more information, jump on the podcast from last week because I walked through both of those stories. And those are just two things that have happened here recently regarding the COVID narrative. And in one very epic Twitter thread, Claremont Institute senior fellow Matthew J. Peterson excoriated Oster's entire premise, and he voiced what many folks are thinking and feeling. And this is what he said, quote, "Hey, sorry you lost your job because of the vax. That doesn't work, and your grandmother died alone, and you couldn't have a funeral, and your brother's business was needlessly destroyed, and your kids have weird heart problems, but let's just admit we were all wrong and call a truce, eh? It's too bad we shut the entire economy down and took on tyrannical powers that have never been used before in this country. Looking back, you should have been able to go to church and use public parks while we let people ride in the streets. But it was a confusing time for everyone. Hey, I'm sorry we scared the blank out of you and lied for years and persecuted and censored anyone who disagreed, but there was an election going on and we really wanted to beat Donald Trump, so it was important to radically politicize the science, even if it destroyed your children's lives." Okay, yes, we said unvaccinated people should die and not get health care, while never questioning Big Pharma once, but we are compassionate people, which is why, even though we shut down the entire economy, we also bankrupted the nation and caused inflation. You're welcome. Let's be friends. Amazingly put, summed it up for everyone and how everyone who's been awake to all of this insanity from the beginning, this is how they're feeling. This is what they're thinking. And as Durden pointed out near the end of his article, quote, "The problem was not people's ignorance of the facts. It was the organized antagonism and censorship against anyone presenting data that was contradictory to the mandate agenda. The active effort to shut down any opposing data is the root crime. Though, and no, it can never be forgotten or forgiven." This is the crux of the matter, though, for believers. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about it a little more.
Hey, this is Bob, the producer of this podcast. Just want to take a quick minute to let you know you can always get your questions in to us. Ask us anything. Feel free to email me at bob@bobsloane.com. bob@bobsloane.com. Or you can always find that information and more in the show notes. Now back to Hannah.
I I know. Now I've got all your ire up. Your blood's pumping. You're angry. If you've been following this story this week, you've been indignant. And your sentiments, your feelings were exactly expressed with everything that I just read to you. But as believers, we all know we're called to forgive, even our enemies. And the people who celebrated the unvaxxed getting fired, separated from family, and dying alone, well, those are certainly not folks we would call our friends. Let me clarify something, though, because you're going to be here. You're hearing this. You've got people on one side who they're angry, they're indignant, they're saying forgiveness never. And then you've got other folks who are saying, but you're a Christian. You're called to forgive. You have to forgive. Forgive and forget, right? And so you're facing this conundrum and you're a little bit confused. And so let me clarify some of this. Forgiveness does not mean you cannot pursue justice to the full extent of the law. It also doesn't mean, insofar as you have control over it, you should permit someone who has demonstrated such poor personal integrity to have authority over yourself or others, whether their authority is within the legacy media, within politics, within business, within pharmaceuticals, within an alphabet agency, etc. This means doing what many of you who listen have already begun to do. You're taking your business elsewhere. You're taking your vote elsewhere. You're taking your news intake elsewhere. And this is exactly why Oster wrote this article. She and others like her who drank the COVID Kool-Aid then conspired to persecute those who didn't. Those folks, they see the writing on the wall and know that with the red wave coming next week, they very well may see repercussions for their COVID zealotry. Listen to me, though. It's not unbiblical to desire justice where injustice has been done. Just the opposite. God calls us as Christians to do justice. That's Micah 6:8. But while we pursue justice, we can and should extend forgiveness. These two are not mutually exclusive. And I know I'm putting on my counselor hat on right now. You guys are just going to have to bear with me. this is another aspect of my life that doesn't always show itself here on this podcast, but this is important. And this is where Christianity really bleeds into politics and into the political sphere. I know that forgiveness can be painful, but it's a biblical imperative. Look, what COVID tyrants did to you and I is nothing compared to what our sin did to the great heart of God and to His Son who loved us and gave Himself for us. We forgive as He forgave us. Let me talk to you about forgiveness for a moment. Unforgiveness never makes things better. And I dare say it's because God will not bless anyone who persists in holding on to an unforgiving attitude towards someone. That's James 4:6, Romans 1:18. And Rick Thomas is a biblical counselor. He's got a biblical counseling blog called Life Over Coffee. He said this in an article that he wrote on this topic. Quote, "Unforgiveness is just one sin, but it will never hibernate in autonomy. It's like cancer. When left to its own devices." And he then provides a non-exhaustive list of some of the frequent consequences of unforgiveness. And as a counselor, I can wholeheartedly agree that this is what happens. When I have somebody who comes in, a lot of times I'll have folks come in who in counseling and they're depressed or they have anxiety or they have all of these things going on. And a lot of times, and it's not always, and I know now I'm getting into touchy ground because sometimes there is something biological, hormonal going on and they need to go see their family doctor. But a lot of times, their mental state is the direct result of bitterness, anger, unforgiveness, and a lot of it comes down to that. And so I would encourage you to examine yourself. And if any of these behaviors that I'm about to go through are in your life, maybe you need to deal with some unforgiveness. and we're gonna come back to the political side of this in just a moment. But the first one, gossip. Folks who are unforgiving, they regularly talk negative about others and especially those who hurt them. Two, critical. The unforgiving person tends to express more negativity than positivity about life. They are very critical about pretty much everything. Very negative. Those who are unforgiving also are joyless. You typically do not characterize the unforgiving person as happy or joyful or hopeful. They also tend to be self-deceived, meaning, and by that I mean that the unforgiving person is unwilling to see their situation with biblical clarity, and they lie to themselves about their situation. And this kind of ties into the next one. The unforgiving person tends to spin the truth to put themselves in a better light. So they're unwilling to see themselves with biblical clarity, and then they're willing to lie in order to put themselves in a better light in front of others. They're also very angry. Unforgiving people tend to exhibit various forms of unrighteous anger. And this is the big one, bitterness. They are very embittered, and they're ongoing. And that's just the fruit of ongoing anger eventually turns into bitterness. That's the fruit of unforgiveness. And then the last one I would mention is offended. The unforgiving person is defensive, and they're quick to retaliate because they view life through the lens of their hurt. And these are folks who tend to be offended at every little thing. And it a lot of times stems from unforgiveness and an unforgiving spirit. And so those are just some things. If you've got any of those things going on, I would encourage you to examine yourself regarding unforgiveness. And I would encourage you to, even regarding this political situation that we're talking about right now, if you're exhibiting a lot of these things, then you might need to consider, am I being unforgiving towards my mom who wouldn't let me come over for Thanksgiving dinner last year? Or am I being unforgiving towards my boss? Or just unforgiving towards, look, again, you can pursue justice, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in a second. You can pursue justice and be forgiving. You do not have to become embittered or angry at somebody for what they've done to you or your family. You can have joy. You can be full of hope. You can be a positive person. You do not have to be a liar. You do not have to be full of anger while you pursue justice. So while you and I should not hold grudges personally, we can still pursue justice lawfully. And look, folks, I know we're threading a needle here. And so I just hang with me, because this is important for us to understand biblically and as a country right now, this balance between justice and forgiveness. Forgiveness is a personal endeavor, while justice is a legal pursuit. You see, there were folks who drank the COVID Kool-Aid and they hurt your feelings. They hurt your feelings so bad. And this would be your grandparents who wouldn't come and visit you when your child was born. And this would be your neighbor who wouldn't come over for Thanksgiving dinner. And maybe that good friend that you grew up with who didn't want to spend time with you anymore, and who scoffed at you and made fun of you for your beliefs regarding COVID. They hurt you. They hurt your feelings. You should forgive them and do your best to repair broken bridges to the best of your ability. Then, there are the folks who participated in COVID tyranny, and their behavior is illegal. This would be your employer who discriminated against you, the media that conspired against you, big pharma execs who lied and physically harmed people, and the governments and politicians that violated your constitutional God-given rights. In other words, these are the folks in positions of authority who knew, yet conspired with big pharma, government, or alphabet agencies to suppress the truth. God extended forgiveness, but there was still a price to pay. You and I don't have to pay the price for our sin because of God's grace and mercy, but the punishment for sin still had to be borne. Which brings us to the good news. the gospel of Jesus Christ who bore our punishment. God didn't just forgive us and love us and then allow us to go on sinning unpunished. No. It's just the opposite. God's justice must be satisfied. God cannot remain just and righteous and ignore the guilty. Similarly, just as God forgave us, you and I forgive those who trespass against us. And just as God demanded punishment for sin, we can demand justice for unlawful wrongdoing. These things are not mutually exclusive. Therefore, we can pursue justice, but it should be free of personal malice, anger, bitterness, or unforgiveness.
Thank you for listening to The Hannah Miller Show. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast. This podcast is produced by Bob Sloan Audio Productions. If you'd like to find out more about Hannah or to schedule her for a speaking event, go to her website, thehannahmillershow.com.